On Monday, the leaders of Ethiopia and Eritrea declared an end to war between the two nations and said that trade and diplomatic ties will be re-established. 70,000 people were killed in their two-year border conflict that began in 1998, but the peace deal that brought it to an end was never fully implemented. Since coming to power in February, Ethiopia's new Prime Minister, Abiy Ahmed, has freed political prisoners, fired officials accused of abuse, and begun to liberalise the economy. Meanwhile, Eritrea's president, Isaias Afwerki, has governed since it became independent in 1993, and he's accused of creating one of the world's most secretive and repressive regimes. Hundreds of thousands of Eritreans have fled the country in recent years, but John Pilkington was surprised by what he found there.
"Why on earth would you want to stay for a month?" asked the immigration officer. It was a question I grew used to during my time in the country. Since so many Eritreans are busy trying to get out, I can see why they were so baffled by my wanting to come in. For nearly 25 years, President Isaias Afwerki has ruled with an unfaltering grip, and woe betide anyone who speaks out against him. Added to this are rising prices, struggling public services, and for some people, a cycle of grinding poverty. But what really gets Eritreans going is their proud history. The Red Sea port of Massawa goes back to Egyptian and Ottoman times, but it's the capital city, Asmara, that really grabs the eye. When the Italians colonised the region 130 years ago, they were so taken by Asmara's perfect mountain climate that they decided this was the place to show off the work of their finest architects. The early buildings were simple and classical. Then along came Mussolini, who wanted an Art Deco capital for his pipe dream East African Empire. So some of the world's best interwar buildings are here, crumbling away under the African sun. Despite all the criticism abroad, I found plenty of Eritreans ready to speak up for their president. At the National Museum, a young anthropologist called Darsalam Said told me, "Isaias is wise and follows his principles." With all media in Eritrea being state-controlled, you might think she would say that, wouldn't she? But this was a bright graduate with international experience, and she was certainly no fool. So how do Eritreans account for their economic woes? "Well, everyone's colluding against us," they said to me. "America, the African Union, and especially Ethiopia." The mention of Ethiopia wasn't surprising, as Eritrea fought a bloody 30-year liberation struggle after Haile Selassie annexed it in 1962, and then an even more brutal border war. Almost every Eritrean knows someone who was a victim of those horrible years. But President Isaias himself bears a lot of responsibility for the country's stagnation today. In an act of what he called self-reliance, he threw out all the international aid agencies in 2015. And a few months ago, his state-owned banks forcibly shut down thousands of businesses for allegedly hoarding cash instead of putting it, guess where, in the banks. Some of these businesses still haven't reopened. Meanwhile, the gruelling, compulsory national service, which can go on for years, has driven thousands of young men to flee the country illegally, leaving parents, wives and children to the mercy of recriminations from the military police. Those who do their army service are deployed to the long frontier with Ethiopia, where small incidents can easily escalate. A broad swathe of land along the border has supposedly been demilitarised, with the armed forces of both sides eyeing each other suspiciously across the desert. Not far away I heard gunfire, but hoped they were just practising. Both Eritrea and Ethiopia have attempted land grabs of each other's territory, and Eritrea has also occupied part of neighbouring Djibouti. As if that weren't enough, the UN has accused Eritrea of equipping and training armed groups affiliated to Al-Shabaab, the Islamist militants who are trying to destabilise Somalia and Djibouti. Eritrea strongly denies this, but its pleas have been ignored, and worldwide sanctions and an arms embargo have been in place for more than 8 years. But change will come, because President Isaias is growing old and by all accounts more eccentric by the day. Many must be secretly hoping that his successor, whoever they may be, will be less of a brute and can somehow bring the country into the modern world. This is the least that the kind and gentle people I met deserve. Despite the disbelief of that immigration officer, I found that a month in Eritrea wasn't nearly enough.